Thanks very much, Ian, and good morning, everyone. What I've been asked to do is to provide a bit of context for the rest of the day, and what I hope to do is to do a bit of a sketch across the whole waterfront of water reform. The National Water Initiative, as you I'm sure know, is about the whole of water reform. It's not just irrigation water or environmental water or urban water. It's all of that. It's not just economics, it's also science. It tries to cover the whole package in a single package. And so it provides a good foundation, I think, for what would follow to do a sketch of how the NWI, the National Water Initiative, is doing. So this is a bit of a roadmap of where we're going, progress in the NWI. I want to then talk towards the end, because the first bit takes up most of it, some specific issues in water reform, pricing, first of all, and then urban water. The NWI itself is, in a word, in a couple of words, more relevant than ever. If you just run your eye down that list of issues there, the NWI tackles all of them, and all of them seem to me to be right at the heart of the water public debate in Australia at the moment. Overallocation is at the top of the list for a good reason. Overallocation is right at the heart of the debate, but all of those other issues as well. Seem to us in the National Water Commission to be the sorts of challenges that Australia will have to settle if it's to manage its water better. And those sorts of things, perhaps the touchstone is climate change as we look forward. Those sorts of things are the challenges that the NWI set out to solve in 2004 and is still tackling even now. One of the roles of the National Water Commission is to do assessments about how things are going, and our most recent assessment is called the first biennial assessment of NWI progress, which we have completed this year, last year and this year, and we'll be doing another one next year. And what we found there was that, yes, the NWI continues to be the agreed national agenda, and it could be otherwise. We could have by now had a breakout, we could have had different attitudes about the NWI, but there aren't. It still continues to be the agreed national agenda, and the general prescriptions in the NWI are still generally agreed, but now there are a whole lot of buts. So as I go through what must be well over a dozen buts, don't forget these first things, that there is a lot in the NWI that is positive and which I won't dwell on. The first one I come back to because it's so central, overallocation, and it's still not being managed as the NWI envisaged. There are commitments in the NWI to move to sustainable levels of extraction. Our assessment is that that isn't happening, and that's almost a statement of the obvious because it's so well accepted in the public debate now, and we've been urging redoubled efforts. The little box at the bottom there, COAG, which I use on this and other slides, is an indication that COAG has commissioned some work in this area. So in this case, we've been urging redoubled efforts to do things about overallocation, and in this case, COAG has commissioned some special work to carry that forward. Water planning is a very important part of the NWI. NWI consistent water planning has a special meaning. It's about getting all the stakeholders around the table who have an interest in a particular water system, putting the science and the evidence on the table, and then working through how the water in that system should be planned for the future. And then the critical thing about the NWI is that it gives statutory force to the outcome of that process. So water planning has more than the conversational meaning of that term in the NWI, it's one of the three very important ways of managing water in Australia, and I'll come to the others, and we don't think that enough has been happening on it. For example, we're concerned about the quality of science or the lack of it that goes into water planning. We're concerned about the quality of the process and accessibility of the process. We're concerned that not enough water plans are being delivered, as this slide says, that water planning processes are terribly laborious, but actually delivering those water plans has been slower than had been scheduled. And why are we concerned about that? Because the whole idea of water planning across Australia in the NWI was to develop that clarity and certainty that is absolutely necessary for irrigation, for environmental water management, and for, in some cases, for urban water management. And I'll be talking more in urban water management as well. So water plans and the water entitlements that are part of water plans are a really important part of building up that certainty so that investment and long-term thinking can happen. Compliance and enforcement. Compliance and enforcement is about as popular as boils, some people say. But even so, we urge there should be more of it. And that's because there's a lack of public confidence in growing areas of Australia about the planning and allocation systems and observance of the water plans and the allocations that flow from those entitlements. And so we've been urging state governments who are responsible for these things to make stronger efforts. And again, COAG has picked up some action in that area. So that's the fourth area where we've been critical. The fifth is management of groundwater and surface water interactions. Groundwater, we think, is the poor cousin of surface water for all sorts of reasons over a long period. Partly perhaps that it's out of sight and out of mind, but it's not well understood. We don't have enough data, hydrological knowledge about groundwater. But the NWI from the outset said that surface water and groundwater needed to be managed jointly, and that isn't happening sufficiently. And we'll continue to highlight that problem. Again, COAG has picked that up in its present work program. And I think one of the messages to take away from the fact that COAG has commissioned all this further work is that the NWI was always meant to be a living document, and the process that we've been involved in of assessing progress was always meant to lead to further emphases and further investments and further work projects, and this is a good example. Interception. Interception has, again, a special meaning under the NWI. Interception is about forms of water loss, such as farm dams and forestry. They are politically difficult. Governments have been talking about it, but with the honourable exception of South Australia, haven't been doing terribly much about water interception. And we've stated in our reports that we haven't seen sufficient concerted action about it. And again, COAG has a working group to try to lift the game. Water trading. The Commission went out on a bit of a limb about water trading early in our life, and we're pleased we did, because water trading is just so important to best allocation of water to its highest value use. And we went out on a limb partly in the context of the National Competition Policy Assessment, which was the first assessment that we did in the life of the National Water Commission. But since then, we've been pressing for removal of barriers to trade, expansion of trade, including between water systems and across state borders, and most recently, simplification and speeding up of water trading. So we argue, and it's a slightly nice argument to make, we argue that yes, there has been good progress. It's often dismissed as saying water trading has been an abject failure. Not so. We think there has been good progress, but there's a lot more to be done, and we're focusing our suggestions now on administrative complexity and the remaining barriers. So COAG again has initiated something there. Our eighth criticism is about the costs of urban water infrastructure and increasingly confusion about what the Commonwealth does and what the state does in relation to urban water infrastructure. Think back to the last federal election. And think of the number of announcements that were made there about Commonwealth involvement in urban water infrastructure. That has been a pretty sharp break from the conventions of the past about which level of government does what in relation to urban water infrastructure. We take no value judgment about which level of government should do what, but we do argue that there needs to be clarification, and we do argue that there needs to be closer complementarity in the activities of the different levels of government in relation to urban water infrastructure. And we've made a specific suggestion along those lines, in the bottom there, about some national guidelines to be signed onto by all governments about government involvement. Water pricing in some states, not all states, but in some states, the regulators aren't as strong as they are in others. Victoria and New South Wales have good regulatory arrangements. Other states have less strong regulatory arrangements. And we do think that there needs to be some strengthening in those states. And we do think that there's an opportunity for national guidelines or closer collaboration between the pricing and regulatory oversight bodies in the different states. And that's not to say that they aren't talking to each other, they are. The role of local government. In some states, local government is responsible for urban water supply, meaning provincial, town, regional, communities' water supply. But this is an increasingly demanding task, very sophisticated, very capital intensive, and we're doubtful that it's a sustainable solution for the long term. So we're urging a review of governance, and if you think about it, that is beginning to happen in a number of states of Australia. South East Queensland, it's almost done. Tasmania, there is a process on foot. And New South Wales, there is a process that is midway. Management of environmental water. I know this is a long litany of problems, but I guess I don't apologise for that. That's our role. But our role is to point it out in a constructive way with suggestions for where policy emphasis should be. So our role is diagnosis rather than prescription about precisely what should be done. But our diagnosis in relation to number 11 here is that management of environmental water has been disappointing. We think that in the NWI there was almost a shiny vision of better environmental water management, and that hasn't been delivered. Sometimes when I'm in country Australia, I ask people, who is your local environmental water manager? And in many cases, I found that people just don't know, and I think that speaks volumes. So environmental water managers can lack identity, credibility, authority. They often lack the resources, the capability, the access to science, and I think we've got a lot to do, if you accept any of that diagnosis, to improve the quality of environmental water management in Australia. And similarly, there is an obligation in the NWI to monitor river health and groundwater, and we've proposed a more harmonised and rigorous national approach to that, which is being trialled now in three states. Water data has been an area that we identified quite early in our life as being seriously deficient. We want evidence-based policy. We want science-based but not science-determined decisions. And to do that, you need much better water data. And we've been pressing that message and have been delighted that the Bureau of Met, that's the bomb at the bottom there, the Bureau of Meteorology has been given $460 million and a powerful legislative remit to significantly improve the quality of water data across Australia. Skill shortages. In the water sector, this is a growing problem, and we're not alone, of course, in our sector to have problems there. And we've been sponsoring a water sector skills task force. COAG itself has set up a similar process, and the two are working in concert with each other. It's not an easy problem to solve, but it's a very real constraint on better management of water in Australia, which is what ultimately the NWI is about. Water science. We have argued that research and development in the water sector lacks coherence. If you like, it's incoherent. A simple example is that there are no national research priorities in water science, and it may be that there would be some advantage in having that sort of guidance. So we've suggested, the box at the bottom, a national water science strategy, and that is indeed being considered by a COAG working group now. Which gets me to urban water reform. In our biennial assessment, we argued that urban water reform has been disappointing, the urban elements of the National Water Initiative were probably the least demanding of all of the chapters of the National Water Initiative. They have, by and large, been achieved, not fully, but reasonable progress, but it was a pretty undemanding agenda. So we argued that perhaps there should be a supplement. Don't reopen the National Water Initiative and have all those negotiations again, but a supplement to the NWI about better, a more challenging urban reform agenda. And we've suggested a number of areas that might be considered in that. Better water planning, that is security of water supply for urban communities. The removal of policy bans. It's a term we invented, but it's about the occasional policy positions, I think indefensible policy positions of governments to say, we in our state won't have desalination, or we in our state won't have recycling, or we in our state won't have rural-urban trading, or we won't have interbasin transfers, or interstate transfers, or no new dams. Now, any of those bans might be justifiable, but none of those bans are justifiable ab initio. So we argue that all options should be on the table. They should be weighed on their merits according to evidence, and the best of them selected. So policy bans is an area that that could be seriously improved. We've also suggested the third bullet point there, a national reliability benchmark, or at least a city-by-city reliability benchmark. Transparency of what the objective is and to the level to which communities are meant to be investing, so that they can be held to account and investments can be made clearer. And COAG has indeed put up a task for the development of an enhanced urban water reform framework. Now, I'm going to skip forward to a couple of suggestions to conclude on about a new urban reform agenda. I've talked about the need to improve transparency about levels of risk, that means to try to have much greater clarity about the level of security that is being invested for, the level of security for which decision makers need to be held to account. I visited a city recently where it was left to the utility, and even within the utility that I spoke to, there were different answers when I asked what was the target level of supply security that was being offered. We think that an urban reform agenda could intensify competition in urban water. There are many ways of doing that, and similarly, there are different ways of providing third-party access. And I've talked at the bottom there about local government and the possibility of smaller local governments getting out of urban water delivery. We also think that pathways through the health and environmental regulations for new supply options need to be simplified. Once you get into this world, it's a terribly complicated, terribly complex area, and we think there's plenty of scope for regulatory clarification, if not improvement. We've suggested getting serious about a national approach to water-sensitive urban design. I had thought this was a bit of a wank early on, but I must say that I think this is a very profound opportunity to make a difference to the water efficiency of our cities. So water-sensitive urban design, for me, I'm a late convert, but I recognise I was wrong. And perhaps a national strategy to better utilise stormwater. We think there's plenty of scope in that as well. So I conclude, Chair, just a summary of what I think the big six challenges for water reform are for the period ahead. And they all start in the left-hand margin there with adjusting to climate change. I think that's the touchstone that will influence everything else. And if I can just work very quickly down the list of topics, they are these. We have to resolve allocation. The 1994 COAG water reforms were essentially about over-allocation. So is the National Water Initiative. So is the current problems in the Murray-Darling Basin. Over-allocation, particularly intensified by climate change, is the biggest public policy challenge in water. Secondly, the irrigation industry will have to adjust. Use those words carefully. There will be some hard decisions that will have to be made, just as there will be hard decisions about environmental choices that have to be made. We possibly cannot sustain all of the environmental assets that we have that are water dependent. Improving the management of water dependent, environmental water. I talked about that before, the fact that environmental water managers aren't even recognised, let alone doing the job well. Security of urban water. Ask the average urban person what the biggest problem is. It's security. Implementing the big Murray-Darling Basin reforms. We're in a Murray-Darling Basin state today, but when I speak in non-Murray-Darling Basin states, they are so frustrated and so irritated that there's such a focus on the MDB. I have to say that for the next year or so, there will continue to be a focus on the MDB, but I think the lesson for policy makers and policy advisers is to think outside the basin as well. And then finally, we need to be finding new Commonwealth-state working relationships in water, because there are big opportunities as well as challenges there. So thank you very much.